You're listening to the Best of Talk Sports, powered by Lloyd's Electric Service. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Lloyd's Electric Service, Truly Hard Seltzer, MyBookie, and Volunteer Vodka.
I'd consider myself a realist, all right? But in philosophical terms, I'm what's called a pessimist.
The show that the city needs.
This town deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to them.
This is Talk Sports with John Reed and Cody McClure.
Leave one wolf alive, and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, John Reed and Cam Black, just the two of us today. For the next 3 hours, we will talk sports and other things. Cam, did you have a good weekend? How you doing?
I did. How about yourself?
It was all right. It was a pretty good football weekend, I thought, at least for me. I came out feeling pretty good. And
I bet.
Both my teams won in a way, like the Titans with a
big win.
Big goal line stand, but it was also a win in the sense that I get to be mad about it because Mike Vrabel's an idiot. I'm just like, what are you doing, Mike Vrabel? You're very stupid. So that was kind of a win, and then, I think that that was a win, and then I think that the Tennessee Vol performance in Alabama was kind of a win, right? I mean, like, you didn't win on the scoreboard, but I feel like fans came out of there feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, that went a lot better than, everybody was expecting, of course, and being that competitive is a really good sign.
Frustrated, like you're able to come out frustrated, and if anybody listened to the voluntary reaction, they got to hear a little bit of it. It was a mix between frustrated at the officials and frustrated at your quarterback situation. But it was good to come in and feel like you were going to be able to play them down to the wire. Felt like if a couple things go differently, you could have even won that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, it was crazy at one point. Like, you kept waiting, saying, probably not going to win. But then Tennessee forces a three and out to start the second half and goes down the field and scores. And, like, okay, one score game. And then you have at that point, you're like, okay, if we can get the ball back here, it looks like we have a pretty good grip on them defensively. Like, when Tua went out for them, it was clear that Mac Jones was not good. And we even talked about that on the show, remember? Like, we talked about the chance for Tennessee to win, and we simulated. We said, if you play this 50 times, Tennessee is going to win, because in a couple of those, like, Tua gets knocked out, and then you have to go down to Mac Jones, and then you don't know what you have there. And then we looked, it's like, it's a three-star. He's not very good. His stats aren't very good. He came in and played that way. Tennessee just couldn't score enough points and couldn't get enough help from the officials, or at least couldn't let the officials didn't let them play even. And ultimately, Tennessee comes up short.
Yeah, some really weird stuff from the officials this weekend all over the place.
It seems like that's a story every week. It seems like every week we come in talking about how the officials messed up this game, messed up that game. And look, there's a lot of games, especially in college football. There's, 60 games a weekend, basically? 130 teams. We'll throw some bye weeks in. There's 50 games a week. You're going to have some mistakes. I understand that. I feel like everyone says this, but I'm not one to usually complain about officiating. I really try not to.
Yeah.
But there were some things in that game that were just like, what are you doing? And you can argue about missed pass interference on Jennings in the end zone, the call on Nigel Warrior where he kind of has a hold of the guy. Maybe those are the right calls. I don't know. You can even maybe say, look, Darrell Taylor kind of laid on the guy a little long, which – you see that replay, and I don't know how anyone defends that personal foul penalty, because, like I said, at that point, you'd kind of start thinking, look, Tennessee's only down 8.
Yep.
We get this ball back here. Like, the offense is hot. Like, Tim Jordan and the offensive line are moving people, and it's been
good.
A long time since we've moved people at Tennessee in a Tennessee-Alabama game, and we were moving people.
Yeah, they looked great. I was not expecting that, but we did know the defense wasn't the same Alabama defense, but, man, they did handle their business there.
Yeah, that was something we had talked about. Look, this isn't the same defense. You're going to be able to move the ball. You're going to be able to score. Now, on the other hand, I did advocate for playing Brian Maurer because of the fact that, like, your defense on Alabama's side, the defense wasn't one that could beat you up or stop you. And obviously Maurer gets hurt. It looks like maybe a second concussion in 8 days. Now you maybe put the rest of the season in jeopardy. You put the South Carolina game in jeopardy. So maybe that line of thinking was wrong, although, A, it's football, and you could get hurt at any time. B, it wasn't like Brian Maurer got hurt lowering his head trying to run. It wasn't like he was being uncareful. It wasn't like your offensive line got whipped and couldn't protect him. He got hurt on a cheap play, like where the guy takes two steps and pushes him down after he already throws the ball.
Yeah.
And then he hits his head on the back. He hits his head on his teammate's knee. So it's kind of a freak play. So if you were saying, oh, that's why you shouldn't have played Maurer, I guess the result might point in your favor. I would say that you're kind of a coward and that, you know, accidents happen. It's football, and he could have got hurt on the first play against South Carolina. And we'll see what happens. Pruitt's addressing the media right now. Tag me, listeners, and anything that you see that is noteworthy, I'll go through and check them during the break. It's just me and Cam today, so we're a little short-staffed. But I came out of there feeling like Tennessee played well at Alabama. Came out of there mad at ESPN for the way they covered that game.
Yeah.
Like, Steve Levy sucks. They're smoking cigars on the sidelines celebrating with Alabama.
Yeah, that's just unprofessional at that point.
Right. and someone made a good point. I believe it was Boomer who made a good point, who said that there's no way that they would have lit up and smoked cigars if Tennessee won that game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Like, they wouldn't have celebrated with us. They wouldn't have gone to the other sideline and celebrated because then it would have looked like they were being disrespectful to Alabama.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a pretty good – it's a pretty good point because I could not see them standing on Tennessee's sideline lighting up as Alabama boos them. So it was 100% just a way to kind of rub it in on Tennessee.
Yeah, that was I couldn't believe they were doing that. It's just, I don't know. It just shows, I guess, the bias kind of ESPN has toward those kind of teams.
But I mean, it felt like they went out of their way already to put the game at 9 o'clock to show off those stupid strobe lights.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's a weird time. It was, I can't think of another game that started at 9.
There's been some on, like, ESPN2, but usually not, like, on the Prime Channel. Usually on the Prime Channel. Maybe they've done it for Pac-12 games back in the day, like, maybe. But it was just a weird game all around. And Tennessee really did some good things, and now the key part comes of, can you carry that over? Can you take that and build and continue this momentum, continue these good vibes you have? You played well for the first half against Georgia. You carried that over and beat Mississippi State. Yep. I was worried that it would be like last year where you beat Auburn, then have to go play Bama, and you kind of get humiliated, and all those good vibes are gone. Yep. However, you went down to Tuscaloosa, and I would say you came out feeling good about yourselves.
Yeah, I think the confidence is pretty high right now.
It should be. If it's
they had it going in Alabama, and it showed on the field, I think, really well. And, yeah, so now this is key stretch, and I think they're in the right, like you said, right place mentally for sure.
Now the question is, we'll see what happens if Brian Maurer is ruled out.
Yeah, that's gonna be huge now, because Garantano did not look good at all against Alabama. I was really, like, you know, pulling for him a little bit, like, oh, maybe this is kind of like his redemption story here. He comes out, plays well against Bama, you know, keeps us in the game. But no, he looked awful.
And that was the frustrating part, is I felt like Garantano played better. Up until the dreadful quarterback sneak, I thought he played better. I thought he did some things that, again, weren't great. He's not a great player. He's not a good player. So, like, you can't ask him to do certain things. But I thought he took care of the ball, again, before the sneak. Everything good I'm about to say is before the sneak. He took care of the ball. I thought he, for the first time in a long time, Cam, handled pressure pretty well. Like, he wasn't able to scramble and pick up first downs, but he was able to scramble and
just keeping plays alive.
Gain a yard or throw the ball away, which is better than getting sacked and losing 7 yards. Now, he got sacked a couple times, or at least once that I saw. I'll have to go back and check the stats, but he scrambled around, extended some plays, and again, even if it was just a 1 yard gain or a get the ball out of bounds and throw it away, like those are good plays and plays that he hadn't made for most of his career. He played good by his standards, grading on a curve. Now, any SEC starting quarterback, especially any non-Vanderbilt, non-Ole Miss, non-Kentucky, even those schools maybe, but a school like Tennessee, if you're starting here, you should be able to hit the pass to Juwan Jennings that he missed. Like, you should be able to drop that one in. You had plenty of room. Alabama's defender inexplicably bit on a stop and go on third and goal from like the 18. Chaney drew it up. It was a beautifully executed play. Jennings sold it, and Jennings was going to score a touchdown. But you oversell it by 4 yards. And
that give him a chance.
That could have been a 14-14 game. And if you had scored the touchdown there, like the whole game changes, especially when Tua goes out. The pressure is so much higher on Mac Jones. And Tennessee had chances, and it's frustrating that they weren't able to capitalize. But again, this was never about Alabama. Would it have been great to win that game? Would it have been great if he scored a quarterback sneak there and just you lose by 8 and you at least have a chance and you look and say, man, that was close? Because people looking nationally will look and say, oh, another 22-point beatdown. Alabama rolls again, even with their backup quarterback. But that wasn't really the case.
Oh, yeah, a lot closer than the final score for sure.
A lot closer. And to the point where, you know, many people would say that, you know, again, if Tua stays in and plays, they win by 17 or so at least, even if Tennessee plays pretty mistake-free. But, you know, if Tua goes out and Maurer plays the whole game, I think Tennessee might have won that game.
Yeah, even Tua was struggling some when he was in.
Like, a little bit.
Interception in the end zone, that's unheard of from him, that kind of interception. That was just I don't know what he was doing there. But
you see the replay, and you're like, what did he see here? Yeah. Because like his tight end wasn't even open, and he had, you know, wasn't looking for the ball. It wasn't like Nigel cut in front of it and made a great play. I mean, Nigel got over there to stop the initial read on the rollout, but then Tua said, ah, YOLO, and threw it anyways.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, how fast is Ruggs? Oh, my God. If I'm Nigel Warrior, like, no one's going to remember, wow, what a great interception. Like, the only play that's going to live on in history is, remember when that guy hawked him down? And it looked like Nigel Warrior was running with the piano on his back. I don't even know if Nigel was running slow. Like, but Ruggs runs like a 4.2, so, like, there's not much you can do there. But we're off and running on this edition of Talk Sports. We'll do it until 3 p.m. Hang out with us. We got more to talk about. We'll stay on Tennessee for a little bit, see if Pruitt said anything of note. Wacky day in the NFL. NBA starts tomorrow. We'll go all over the place. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. What are we doing here, Cam? Love Shack?
Love is in the air.
Love is in the air, is it? Like, I mean, cuffing season, I guess, is off and running. Are you trying to send a message to somebody listening? Like, what the hell's going on here? Because songs in there. I don't know if you've noticed for the fantasy segment, I put in some baby making music. So feel free to throw those on if love is in the air. I don't need Love Shack.
All right, noted.
Let's make that a point of emphasis moving forward. All right, so Jerry Pruitt had a couple of comments. Let's see. First up, he says that Brian Maurer, concussion. I trust our medical staff, but right now he's still being evaluated. So I would say that that is a positive. I was really thinking there was a decent chance that Pruitt comes out and immediately says, hey, Maurer's out for the South Carolina game.
Yeah.
So I will say that's a positive. That at least, you know, if we're being selfish and want Tennessee to beat South Carolina, which again, this whole season might come down to beating South Carolina. I said that about Mississippi State, and you got the first leg of it. I do feel like you waste a lot of the goodwill if you lose this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Missouri even looks beatable now after you saw their performance this weekend. So, hey, maybe you don't need the South Carolina game as bad, but definitely one you'd want.
I do still worry, Cam, about this team's psyche. I think they have to keep it rolling. I don't know if they can handle another setback. By that I mean, like, even as we all felt pretty good coming out of the weekend, you still had some of your depth guys complaining on Twitter yesterday. I don't know if you saw. There were some players complaining about playing time and, you know, kind of making it about them, which is, you know, on one hand, I'm like, hey, you're a team. You probably shouldn't be doing this whenever you finally got some good things going. Yep. On the other hand, I'm like, I get it. You're a college football player who has X amount of years to try to accomplish a dream of making a name for yourself and playing professional football. And if you come to the University of Tennessee on scholarship, you probably have aspirations of making the NFL. You've seen people do it, you know, all-star rankings. You've seen Cam Sutton go from three-star to NFL cornerback.
Yep.
You've seen, you know, quarterbacks come here and, you know, get shots in the NFL, you know, even on rosters, like Matt Sims still on a roster somehow. Like, not sure there was some nepotism there of his dad maybe, but, like, you get a break. You get a shot. You get a look. So I understand any player who comes here probably wants to play at the next level.
Absolutely.
And if you're not getting a chance to showcase yourself, you are going to get frustrated. I understand it. It's still frustrating whenever the team starts playing well and you have some good vibes going that you have guys tweeting about playing time and being upset. But I do think the entire team has the danger of getting back to, oh, man, this goal for a team is now gone. Because now it's easy to still have the seniors bought in and the upperclassmen. Like, it's still easy to have Juwan Jennings and Callaway bought in because there's a goal of, hey, let's rally, let's win seven games, let's make a bowl game. If you get that seventh loss and the ball game's out the window, then you're pretty much only looking at, hey, let's get these young guys playing time and, like, let's build for the future. And the old guys don't want to do that, and they lose some motivation. Yeah. So every win matters and every loss really hurts. So I think the South Carolina game is just ginormous in the sense of, like, you're looking like you're ready to turn the corner. Okay, now turn the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. They do still have to prove it because like, yeah, we're seeing good signs the past few games. But, yeah, they're yet to take that next step to show that they can consistently win. And, yeah, there's
a chance
to do it.
We only have one win that matters this year, right? Like, I mean, we still, if you pull it down, and that's a pretty humbling reminder, you still only have one win. I'm throwing UTC out. That one doesn't count. So for as much as it looks and feels like you're playing better, you still only have one win, and you got to go get some more. I thought the SEC East was weak all year. That's one of the reasons I thought Tennessee could really have a good season and take a leap, like a non-win leap. Now, granted, whenever we were saying that, I was taking Georgia State into account and BYU. So if Tennessee was rallying to finish with seven wins, like I would look at that and kind of say, oh, wow, that kind of feels like a non-win season. So you look in the rest of the SEC East is not good. Obviously, Mississippi State was not good. There is not a team left on Tennessee's schedule that they should feel intimidated by.
I agree.
Going into Missouri should not be intimidating. Like, that team just got whipped by Vandy. And I know it was only a 7-point game, but, like, Vandy's backup quarterback had to come in for a play and threw basically a pick six. Like, that game could have been a blowout, or at least one that Vandy easily handled Missouri. And I get that it was at Vanderbilt and not at home, and Missouri is not good on the road. They lost to Wyoming and Vanderbilt, but they've been pretty good at home. I understand that. But I also understand that Missouri hasn't beaten anybody, and they still have to play Georgia and Florida before they play Tennessee, and that Tennessee is coming off of a bye week. Like, that game should bode well for Tennessee's chances. Will Tennessee be favored? No. They'll be underdogs, most likely, but that's okay. They were underdogs against Mississippi State. They're underdogs this weekend against South Carolina. Now, granted, only 4.5-point underdogs, but it's a game that I'm going to expect Tennessee to win, same as Mississippi State. Tennessee was a touchdown underdog there. That didn't make sense to me. Tennessee was able to win. I understand South Carolina has put together two good weeks, right? They beat Georgia, and they beat Florida for a little while, and they feel like they beat Florida on the field if it wasn't for officiating. Whatever. They played good against Florida. But, South Carolina's in a similar position, right? Like, they lost to Florida. They've lost pretty much every other game that matters. They beat Kentucky, I guess, which is good for them because they usually lose to Kentucky. They got the one win against Georgia. Otherwise, they still are looking for wins too. And they might be in a situation where they got up for Georgia. They won. They got up for Florida. Felt like they got screwed. Maybe they're coming in a little upset. Maybe they're coming in, you know, coming down off of two emotional highs. We know these are college kids. But maybe Tennessee's in that same boat of beat Mississippi State and had a chance against Alabama. The good news is Tennessee's at home, and I do think you'll get a good crowd that kind of boost Tennessee up.
Yeah, I think fans are back in a little bit. They're a lot in, actually.
But, yeah.
I do think we'll get a pretty good showing for South Carolina. Because, I mean, even Georgia was a good showing.
Right. But, again, like, you're keep building. Like, you get a little confidence. Okay, we played good against Georgia for a half, all right? We beat Mississippi State. We played good against Alabama. You're rising. I get worried what happens if you take a dip and you lose a game at home in front of a bunch of people who are there to see you. Because a lot of people I talk to are looking forward to the game on Saturday, like looking for tickets, wanting to go to support the boys. Like, that's a good sign.
Absolutely. And, South Carolina is in, like, a very similar position to us where they're trying to get to that bowl game. And
yeah.
It's going to be questionable.
They have to beat Tennessee. It feels like they need to beat Tennessee to make a bowl game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even that, their only other almost guaranteed win is Vanderbilt left on their schedule.
Schedule pulled up?
Yeah.
Go ahead and give it to us.
At Tennessee versus Vandy.
They have three wins right now currently, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they play App State, who's
who's
really
ranked,
good.
But they should probably beat.
Yeah. And then they have at A&M and versus Clemson.
Yeah, so I mean, like, they need three wins, Tennessee, App State, and Vandy. That's what you're looking at if you're a South Carolina fan. So Tennessee's looking in the same position, like, hey, we really need this one. South Carolina's looking at it, we really need this one. I like our chances at home. I thought it was funny that Jeremy Pruitt was asked about Garantano's goal line fumble, and all he says is, it's pretty obvious what happened, but we've moved on.
Yeah, I still can't believe he did that. That's insane.
The overhead shot of that play is so frustrating, man, because Trey Smith pulls and blows up his assignment. There's a gap where Crouch could easily get through and score that touchdown.
He wanted to be the hero.
It was... I would understand if you want to be the hero, bro, if it was like to tie the game, but if we're still down 15, just save your heroic moment for later. Like, you're going to have to score again. You trust me, dude, you're not going to be a hero for scoring the touchdown that puts us down 8. Like, what were you thinking? And that's going to be an interesting dynamic to this week, too.
Yeah.
We'll continue this conversation because I'm actually okay talking about the Vols right now. They've given me something to talk about. Usually I rebel against this because it's, for a while it seemed pointless, but right now they're actually kind of intriguing in what they're looking at and how they're playing and what lies ahead. We'll continue the conversation on the other side. It's Talk Sports, powered by Lloyd's Electric. Lloyd's Electric Services is the region's most trusted service provider and a leader in mechanical and electrical service, industrial maintenance infrastructure, and commercial building services. Commercial building maintenance doesn't have to be pieced out to different companies. All of your facility maintenance needs can be handled by one trusted Knoxville company with a service record that speaks for itself. The LES Facility Service Division believes that facility maintenance should include it all. HVAC and refrigeration, Lloyd's deals with all top brands in HVAC, commercial and industrial units, chillers, and restaurant equipment. Telecommunication, Lloyd's is a trusted source for all fiber and hybrid coax installations. Let their team of highly qualified technicians upgrade and maintain your network. Their around-the-clock service repairs are available anytime, day or night, 365 days a year. Commercial, industrial, residential, Lloyd's does it all. Contact them at 865-692-6700 or online at lloydselectricservice.com. Lloyd's Electric Services, your business, our priority.
Field all the time when you can't do anything with offense, no matter how good the defense is.
Apologies to the podcast people. You missed a riveting NFL conversation. I missed a whole segment for you. That's on me. My bad. Damn it. Forgot to start it back. But I started it back just in time to tell them that we're getting ready to catch a break. We'll continue the NFL conversation. On the other side is Talk Sports, powered by Lloyd's Electric. Back on the program. Yeah, I mean, one of my big takeaways, I've been tough on Kirk Cousins, and I do still think it is coming. I do still think he will have the meltdown, and I do not think you can win with him in the long run at a high level, but you've seen that the Vikings have a really good team, and when Kirk Cousins does play really well, they become one of the best teams in the league altogether. Feels like a two-team race in the NFC North. Cam, feels like a one-team race in the NFC South. I know that the Panthers are 4-2, but man,
I think the Saints are way better than everybody else right now. I'd almost say they're the class of the NFC right now. I think that's not a hot take or anything really. Like, they're doing this without Drew Brees. Defense looks good. Special teams looks good. Offense is still moving.
Yeah, yesterday when I was watching that game, I got the vibe that, like, man, I don't know if they would do better with Drew Brees. Just like the way Teddy Bridgewater played yesterday, like, Teddy Bridgewater was really good yesterday against a really good Bears defense without Alvin Kamara. Checkdown Teddy was 23 of 38, 281 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Like, you know, he had four scrambles, including one for a big first down, I believe, on extend a drive.
Yeah, you definitely lose that mobility with Brees coming back, and I think Brees also takes a few more risks than Teddy does.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I definitely think it takes more risk. Like, he's checked down Teddy for a reason. Yeah. Like, he's going to play safe. And you don't think of the Saints as having a defense that just needs a game manager. But, man, like, Teddy was a little bit better than a game manager yesterday. And the Saints beat down the Bears. Now, Mitchell Trubisky was awful and helped. But no Alvin Kamara, no problem. Michael Thomas, 11 targets, 9 catches, 131 yards. Like, Bridgewater still getting the ball to him. Latavius Murray, 27 carries, 119 yards, even caught 5 passes for 31 yards. Like, this Saints team's rolling. We all assume that Brees is going to get the job back, though, right? Like, Brees is hoping that he can practice this week and maybe play in Arizona. If I'm Brees, maybe I do try to rush back to play Arizona. That way I can beat them. That way my first game back isn't a potential division loss, because I think after this upcoming game against Arizona, they then have a bye week. And then play the Falcons at Bucks, Panthers at Falcons. So 4 straight division games. Now, granted, 2 of those are against the Falcons, and Cam, cover your ears. The Falcons kind of suck. They should not struggle with them.
It would be super on brand, though, for us to only get our only 2 other wins be against the Saints, and I would be I'd take that. I'd take that season.
3-13 with a sweep of the Saints?
Absolutely. But like,
we all assume Brees is getting the job back, and I guess he probably should, but it does make it an interesting conversation now that Teddy is 5-0 as a starter. At least Teddy maybe made himself a lot of money in New Orleans. If Brees hangs around another year, and maybe they're like, hey, maybe Teddy can be this bridge to the future. Maybe he can be our quarterback for the next 4 or 5 years. Or at the very least, the price goes up. And Teddy made such a good decision. He made such a good decision, and I don't think we've given Teddy Bridgewater enough credit for looking around and saying, I can go be the starter in Miami and get the hell beat out of me on a losing team, or I could stay, be the backup in New Orleans and continue to be in a good system, be with a good franchise, and not hurt my stock. I don't think he knew that he was going to help his stock by getting to play, but I mean, man, like going 5-0 as a starter, the price for Teddy Bridgewater services have gone up, whereas if he'd have gone to Miami behind that offensive line, he might have, you know, basically ruined himself and been out of the NFL, at least in terms of being a starting quarterback.
And there's a lot of teams that may be looking for new quarterbacks next year. So, yeah, he definitely signing just a 1-year deal with the Saints was brilliant on his part.
There's going to be a lot of quarterback maneuver this upcoming offseason. And Teddy Bridgewater, I don't want to overstate it, but, man, after going 5-0, now, again, I know he has a lot of skill players around him, and I know, like, in their games, like, they didn't light the scoreboard up in a couple of them. Like, they beat the Cowboys 12-10, and, you know, against the Seahawks, they scored 33, and 14 of those were on defense and special teams, and 13 points against Jacksonville. But, I mean, this performance against the Bears and a couple weeks ago against the Bucks, they scored a bunch of points, and Teddy might be the number one free agent quarterback if he hits the market.
Yeah, and like you were talking about last week about the Titans needing probably getting like a stopgap and drafting a young QB. Like, if other teams are following that model, yeah, he's got to be the number one guy you're looking for to be that guy that you can just bring in, have a young quarterback on the bench for a year or two, and still be competitive. So, yeah, he definitely helped himself out here.
Now, I will say that someone else helped their case yesterday in terms of that, too. My man. My man. Ryan Tannehill. We got Tannehill or Tannehill? Let's try that again. My man. Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I think that one's the one. Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah, we want to go Trill. Not How about yet. Big Ryan Tannehill?
No, yeah, I was pulling for him in that game. I was a big, I think he was super underrated in Miami. So I was glad to see him actually still being pretty successful. Titans dodged a bullet too at the end, but yeah, he played well.
I don't think it was Ryan Tannehill's fault that they were in a battle, but man, the Chargers were the only team in the league that could outdumb the Tennessee Titans, and Mike Vrabel has to be thanking his lucky stars that he did not cost the Titans that game. That was as big of a coaching malpractice as I've seen. Three timeouts left, 2 minutes and, 20 seconds left?
Yep.
And he does not challenge the spot on a quarterback sneak. That the replay really makes it look like he would have gotten the first down. Like, watching live, I thought it was a for sure first down. I gave a fist pump saying game over because the Chargers were without timeouts. You could kneel the ball down three times. But they rule it short, and for some reason, Meathead Mario doesn't challenge the spot, and the Chargers get the ball back and go right down the field. It looks like they score a touchdown twice. They get stopped, and then Melvin Gordon, buddy, you can't be whining and complaining about how you don't get enough fourth quarter carries, and then they give you the ball twice on the goal line, and you come up short on one, and then you fumble on the second. Like,
yeah,
I think those were his only two touches in the fourth quarter, too. By the way,
oof, yeah, not a good look. Yeah, when you're begging for carries, like you said. It was a wacky ending there, kind of. Also, how about your punter? Punter with a big pass.
Hey,
too.
Man, Brett Kern's one of our best players. Like, sometimes it feels like an insult, and it means like we don't have a lot of good players, but sometimes it feels like, no, this guy's just a baller. Like, he had a big completion on a fourth down that set up a field goal on Tennessee's first drive, and then, you know, it pinned him deep a couple times. Titans offense looked like a new unit. Like, scored 23 points, which in today's NFL isn't much, but when you had scored a 7 combined points in 10 quarters, 23 might as well be 50.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they gained 400 yards of offense, and like I said, Ryan Tannehill has 300 yards passing and 2 touchdowns and made a couple of big plays, and maybe the most important thing, Cam, is that heading into week 7, the Titans had given up a league-high 29 sacks. Yesterday against Joey Bosa, who really got it going in the second half, Titans only gave up 2 sacks. 0 the entire first half, 2 in the third quarter. But the offensive line looked better all of a sudden when they had a quarterback who was confident and could move around properly in the pocket, scramble when he had to, move around the pocket when he had to, but got the ball out quick, was decisive and made good throws, and all of a sudden the Titans wide receivers didn't look like a bunch of losers. All of a sudden you remember, oh, wait, this guy was a top 5 pick. And, oh, wait, they did take A.J. Brown near the top of the second round. Like, wow, these guys actually do have some skilled players. And all of a sudden Tajay Sharpe is catching a touchdown and making a play. Like, it's been a long time. Like,
I forgot he was on the team.
That's what I'm saying. Like, go through Corey Davis's game log, bro. Like, it feels like it's been a long time since he's had 6 catches.
Yeah. I will take credit for I called that in our fantasy talk last week. I said Tannehill will like Corey Davis. So
6 catches, 80 yards, and a touchdown. So if that's PPR, that's 20 points.
Yeah, good fantasy week. So
got 7 targets. Like, that's a game high or season high, excuse me, in targets and a season high in catches. He had 6 catches, 80 yards, and a touchdown. You finally got your skill players the ball, and all of a sudden you remember, oh wait, this guy's pretty good. He hadn't had more than 6 catches. He hadn't had 6 catches since, I'll have to look and see what week this is, but it's the middle of the season against the Patriots last year. That was November 11th. So like that's kind of like right at the week 9 probably. Rest of the season didn't have 6 catches. This year hadn't had 6 catches. 1 game for Ryan Tannehill, and he remembers, oh, wait, we have some pretty good receivers. Let's throw them the ball.
Yeah, you spent those high draft picks on those weapons, and finally somebody's actually taking advantage and using them. So
that was a good sign to see. And the defense, look, the defense, man, I was preparing for it because, like I said, it felt like the Titans' defense is elite until it has to be. And they had a 10-point lead. It was 23-13 with 6 minutes left. They let the Chargers go right down the field and score in 3 plays. And, it really looked like they were going to give up the game-losing touchdown as well at the end. Luckily, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, by the way, man, what a stud. He got his first start, first round pick, beats the timetable. Some people thought he might be out the entire year. He gets back in time for week seven, and he helped blow up that play at the goal line. He took his guy and pushed him into the backfield, which opened up a spot for Jarrell Casey, another defensive lineman that you consider a stud. He's able to get an arm up and knock the ball out of Melvin Gordon's hand and recover the fumble. Those were big plays.
Yeah, Simmons was huge. A sack, two tackles for loss, and a QB hit on top of that.
Yeah, and like I said, on the last play, in the last play, he didn't get any credit because he didn't, you know, get a tackle or cause the fumble. But if you watch the replay, he took his guy and pushed him 2 yards into the backfield, which really cluttered things up and helped lead to that Melvin Gordon fumble. So all of a sudden, the Titans are 3-4 and not out of it. Not out of it. They have the Bucs this weekend. The Titans are favored, so only 2.5-point favorites. The Bucs are coming off of a bye, but I like the Titans' chances of getting back to 4-4. And then at that point, you look and you go to Carolina, which is a winnable game. Those are two teams that are similar to each other, and home against the Chiefs, where you should have Matt Moore. All of a sudden, the Titans look like they can get to 6-4 before the bye week and maybe have a chance to salvage the season. It's frustrating because it's a lot like what happens here in Knoxville. It was kind of obvious to everyone watching that, man, you needed a quarterback change. You needed a quarterback change, and I really do feel like if the Titans had Ryan Tannehill playing all year, they would be 6-1.
I was calling for it, but
we said it here in August. I don't know if you – I think it was when you were in California maybe. No, it was when Davey was in – or it was when Cody was in California. It was me and Davey. Me and Davey had the argument. I was like, hey, put Tannehill in, man. It's time. Like, he is going to help this offense. Mariota's cooked, and – you know, you come out, you win week one against Cleveland. So, like, at that point, you become like, oh, man, everything's fine. But, yeah, like, you win the Colts game if you have Tannehill. You probably beat the Jaguars. You beat the Bills. You probably beat the Bills if you just have a damn field goal kicker. But I also think you beat the Broncos if Tannehill played earlier in that game. Like, the Titans all of a sudden had some life in offense, and the season outlook looks a little better. Sounds familiar, huh? It's kind of what's been going on here in Knoxville with Brian Maurer and JG. We'll continue talking NFL next. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports, powered by Lloyd's Electric. Another big takeaway from week seven of the NFL weekend. I was able to defeat Cody McClure's fantasy team. Now, I will say I did not come in with the 50-point win, although I will argue that was before he made all those trades. He really put together a good roster and made a bunch of trades. But I was still able to be victorious in large part thanks to Ezekiel Elliott, who he traded me. A little bit of an extra twist irony of the knife.
Yep.
I needed 24 points from Zeke. He got me 27, 28. I think I won by 3 points. So feels good.
Win's a win.
Feels good to be a winner.
Yeah, my team's sliding after my start. So,
Twitter writes in that on the Jumbotron in Nashville after Jeffrey Simmons got his sack, they actually accidentally showed Brent Urban, who they had just released to activate Simmons on the Jumbotron. Mm-hmm. That's a couple things. Like, at least shout out to Brent Urban for still being there watching, and shout out to Jeffrey Simmons for being a beast. But man, that had to suck.
Yeah, that's rough. That's like they kept showing Vic Beasley in the Falcons game while he was, like, crying because he was, you know, they're talking about trade rumors of him, and he was talking about how he thought he let down Dan Quinn and all that kind of stuff.
You have, buddy. You have.
Oh, yeah.
You've been a loser. You've been a loser, Vic Beasley. You have done it.
Yeah, I also don't understand why they put him in coverage multiple times a game, but
yeah,
that's besides the point.
That's frustrating. Like, and look, I'm happy with the Titans win. Again, I'm speaking this 6-4 into existence because I do think it's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, man, it's really frustrating when it feels like you have a dumbass for a head coach. And, you know, as a Titans fan and a Vols fan, I was a little worried that I had two dumbasses. I have a better feeling about Jeremy Pruitt, a lot better feeling about Jeremy Pruitt. Mike Vrabel, just because Jarrell Casey and Jeffrey Simmons made a big play yesterday, you're not off the hook, buddy. I'm still worried you're a dumbass. You have made some really bad decisions. Really, week in, week out, like, there, you know, every week it seems like there is one decision that you're just like, what are you doing, bro? What are you doing? Like, I look and you go for it on fourth down in the fourth quarter against the Falcons when you're up 14 instead of kicking a field goal and going up three scores. You kick a field goal against Buffalo 52 yards out with 6 minutes left when you're down seven and your kicker is 0-for-3. In Denver, I don't know if there's any one decision that stuck out to me other than just like you stuck with Mariota way too long. But then yesterday in that game, like I don't understand how he did not challenge that fourth down spot on the quarterback sneak. Like you had three timeouts. Like what's the worst that could happen? You lose a timeout? Okay. You didn't need the timeout. And you actually spent that same timeout to help the Chargers have more time left and to save them from a 10-second runoff. I get the idea of like, oh, we need to take a timeout here. That way we'll have 32 seconds left in case the Chargers score a touchdown. Look, Ryan Tannehill ain't going the length of the field in 32 seconds and two timeouts. I'm sorry. Just bad coaching from Mike Vrabel, but the team bails him out. But I am worried that my coach is a dumbass. Other big takeaways, man, like Lamar Jackson, what Baltimore did. I did not think Baltimore could go on the road and do that, but Baltimore did it. And it was in no small part due to Pete Carroll also being a dumbass. Like, Pete Carroll gets a lot of credit for being a good coach. Like, we give Pete Carroll a lot of credit for being smart. And he's been with Seattle for a long time. He's made the Super Bowl twice. He won one. So, like, he's tenured. He's got the accolades. But some of the stuff he does is really dumb. And on the other hand, like, you had Harbaugh in Baltimore be aggressive. Go for fourth downs. You know, they took the lead that they didn't give back on a fourth and two at the end of the third quarter when it's 13-13, and he was going to kick the field goal, but like Lamar's like, nah, let's go for it. And Harbaugh's been playing the numbers all year, and it takes a gutsy coach to do that because some of these numbers, like if you're going to be aggressive, Cam, like you have to stay aggressive.
Yep.
It's like what they say in blackjack to an extent. Like you have to make a decision on whether or not you're going to hit on 16. And if you do make that decision, you have to go with that decision every time. You can't just go back and forth on your moves. Like, you can't go with gut feeling. It feels like you just have to either consistently hit on 16 or stay.
Yeah, and people were really questioning Baltimore's defense going into this game, too, and two defensive touchdowns,
and shout-out to Marcus Peters. Like, they just traded for him, and, you know, he's a zone cornerback. Like, there's a reason he wasn't as successful in Los Angeles when they wanted to play man. Marcus Peters isn't a guy who wants to play man. He wants to play zone, and he baited Russell Wilson into his first interception of the season, and he took it to the house, and that kind of swung the game back in Baltimore's favor because at that time it was 10-6 Seattle with them driving, looking to extend the lead. But Peters made a big play, and, you know, both of those cornerbacks that got traded this week, Jalen Ramsey made some plays against Atlanta too. Like, Julio still got off a little bit, and I said he'd have 8 for 80. That's about what he had.
Yeah.
But there was a play where – you know, Jalen Ramsey forced a fumble. Now the Falcons got back on top of it, and the Rams didn't recover it. But Ramsey was making some plays, I think there's a little extra motivation for that Ravens defense, though. Like Marcus Peters is there, but also like Earl Thomas is going back to Seattle.
Wanted it. You see, they kept blitzing him, trying to get him a sack.
Yeah.
It was funny, but he definitely put some fire on that defense. He really won that win, and hey, they got it done.
How do you feel about Baltimore, man? They have a 2.5 game lead. Over Cleveland, or two and a half game lead over Cleveland. The Browns are 2-4. The Ravens are 5-2. Cleveland's on a bye this week. Baltimore has a 2.5 game lead.
I mean, I think they'll win the division for sure, but
I don't want to call it insurmountable, but like it does feel like they got off to a really good start, and I don't know if any of those other teams are good enough to catch up. Like that win against Seattle yesterday in Seattle was one that the rest of the division was hoping they would lose, and they did not.
Yeah, I was really thinking people would kind of have Lamar Jackson figured out a little bit this year after having tape on him last year, at least be able to slow him down more. But, hey, he's been great this year.
You can figure him out to an extent, but at a certain point, like, bro, he's still faster than everybody and more athletic than everybody. And, look, passing the ball, he didn't have a good day. He was 9 of 20, 143 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. You know, he did have a couple drops from Mark Andrews as tight end, but
missing his number one receiver as well.
But, man, like, you can scheme for it, but at a certain point, if your quarterback can have 14 rushes for 116 yards and a touchdown, like, And that wasn't like, you know, padded by a super long run. I mean, he had a 30-yarder, but 13 for 80 is still really good, too. 13 for 86 absolutely. Is still really good, too. So, like, Lamar Jackson is just really, really good. And when you have Bobby Wagner say, we have one of – like, that Lamar Jackson is one of one. Like, there's no other quarterback who can do what he does. That is pretty telling. And Lamar Jackson, again, you know, has some limitations throwing the ball. But what he does running the ball, if he can stay healthy, that's always the caveat. If he can stay healthy doing it, it's pretty damn dangerous, you know? It's pretty dangerous. And you look at matchups in the AFC, I like their chances against Kansas City, like with Kansas City, the way they play run defense. Like, and especially like if Baltimore, we haven't really talked about it, but Baltimore has a chance right now to be the 2 seed. Like with Mahomes going out, like Baltimore is pretty firmly set up to have a chance to go and be the 2 seed overall.
Yeah, people, I think, thought the Texans were going to kind of be that team fighting for the 2 spot, but
that was a bad loss for them yesterday.
Yeah.
Not in the sense that, like, losing to the Colts coming off a bye week is bad, but, like, Watson struggled.
How it looked, yeah.
Watson didn't play well. You let Jacoby Brissett kind of have his way with you. Like, it was bad the way you lost.
Yeah, Brissett looked good. 4 touchdowns, 326 yards. Like,
no interceptions. He took care of the ball. Like, he had a bad fumble. He had a bad fumble where he kind of just dropped the ball. But the Texans were the one that dropped the ball. And they got kind of screwed on an earlier play in the first half where Watson extended a play and threw a touchdown to Hopkins, but the refs blew it dead and said he was in the grasp of a defensive lineman, which he kind of was, but he was still moving around and still threw it while grasped. And that was a tough break, but the Colts win that game and take first place in the AFC South. And, you know, their schedule is set up for them to win the division. They only play 3 teams right now with a winning record the rest of the year.
Yeah, they're definitely in a good spot.
If Baltimore can get what they got from their defense, though, that feels like they are set up for a run to the 2 seed. But they have a game, their next game. They got a bye week. They're heading into a bye week now, so they'll celebrate beating Seattle. Mm-hmm. Go into the bye week, and then they come back, and they got a home Sunday night game against the Patriots. We'll find out a lot about both of those teams, Baltimore and New England, in a couple weeks whenever they square up on Sunday night. That'll be a fun game. I want to see how Bill Belichick schemes for Lamar Jackson, because obviously if there's any coach that you think can put a game plan together, it's Bill Belichick, right?
Yeah, and you would think this is the best team the Patriots have played so far this season.
It will be.
Play them, so.
It will be. We'll learn a little bit more about the Patriots tonight. Like they're just playing the Jets, but Sam Darnold is back, so we'll see. We'll see how they look and see if they could keep it close and maybe test the Patriots.
Yeah, the Giants were able to put a few points on them for a while last week. So, yeah, maybe Sam Darnold can do the same thing.
Hour 2 in the books. Hour 3 on deck. Let's talk sports powered by Lloyd's Electric.
My name is John Reed, and for years people made fun of me for not drinking beer. I tried to find some replacements, but they were all far too sugary and left me feeling bad. Lucky for me, I found Truly Hard Seltzer. It's refreshing with only 1 gram of sugar. You truly love to see it.
It's the dawn of a new game day, and Truly Hard Seltzer is subbing in for light beer. With 5% ABV, only 100 calories, and as light and refreshing. Game day with Truly Hard Seltzer. Drink what you truly want. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, drink responsibly.
Yodeling boy, he's going to perform at the Knoxville Walmart.
He better stick with the hits and what got him famous. He better yodel. He better sing Lovesick Blues.
Where'd you go this week?
Airing every day from noon to 3.
Mason Ramsey sticks to his roots, okay? He's not the kind of guy. He's not going Taylor Swift on
it. Yeah, that's exactly what his new single sounds like.
Well, he's
like.
Trying to branch out.
Well, that's fine. He didn't stay to his roots. He branched out immediately. The first chance he got, he branched out.
On 1340 WKGN.
Did you hear how quick that happened, Ben Lee? He stuck to his roots and he branched out in the same sentence.
You can stick to your roots and still branch out. That's what trees do. I mean, that's what trees do.
Hour 3 kicking off in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour 3 is brought to you by MyBookie. MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code Knoxville. and they will match your deposit 100% up to $1,000, and we get credit for it. Currently, right now, my bookie, the Jets, are 10-point dogs. Money line plus 335, over under a 43.5. I don't really like anything in that game. I'm not going to tell you to take anything in that game. Just maybe watch if you got some fantasy implications, or maybe if you want to see Sam Darnold. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know what to do with that Patriots defense. I think the Jets will be able to move the ball, maybe cover the spread at the end, but I don't know. I'm not advocating for anything there. But use the promo code Knoxville. You play, you win, you get paid. MyBookie.ag. All right, hour three headlines. Cam Black, John Reed. Let's double team.
All right. Ohio State jumps over Clemson to number three in the AP poll. The new AP poll came out recently. And, yeah, after this past weekend, Ohio State has moved past Clemson. Ohio State received 13 first-place votes to Clemson's 9. So they did jump over them. They both had blowouts, but I guess they thought Ohio State's was a little bit more impressive, which I would agree. I mean, like you said, about Trevor Lawrence was struggling a little bit at times. But so, yeah, the new AP poll is out. Alabama remains number one, followed by LSU, and then Ohio State, Clemson, and Oklahoma round out the top five. Penn State moved up to 6. Florida's sitting at 7. Auburn's at 9. Georgia's at 10. Oregon moved up to 11. Let's see what else. SMU's at 16. Baylor's up at 14, like we mentioned earlier. Wisconsin dropped to 13th in the poll. Boise's still ranked even after losing to BYU last week. They're sitting at 22nd. And okay. Wake Forest has entered at 25.
I'm not going to take like Wake Forest and Boise seriously, but whatever. I guess you got to have 20. If you have a top 25, you have to have 25 teams, right?
Yeah.
Should probably just drop it down to the top 15. I feel like they always just like start really just guessing after 15. Sometimes it feels like they're guessing after 10, but either way.
There's 10 teams in the poll that are undefeated at the moment. Most of them are in the top 6.
Okay.
But, yeah, some of those small schools are still trying to get those New Year Day bowls.
A severe drought that has drained water sources in Zimbabwe's largest national park has left 55 elephants dead since September, a spokesman for the county's wildlife agency says.
Oof.
Why am I crying in the studio right now?
Hey, you hate to see that.
55 elephants. Man, I love elephants. Elephants are really smart, right?
Yeah, they
are. Real emotional and stuff, too.
Yeah, they do. Like, they mourn their dead and stuff like that. So they really are sad that all were hurting.
Just imagining how, like, so. Because, I mean, you know all 55 didn't die at the same time, right?
Yeah, it was probably staggered.
They were dead
at
different times. Yeah. Like, they were mourning and knowing that it was coming. That's sad. Move on. Next headline, please.
All right.
Poor elephant.
Facebook has reportedly reached deals with multiple publishers
hopefully
to provide content.
Hopefully Maharaj is okay.
For upcoming, do I have this upcoming news tab? Facebook is basically going to launch a new tab dedicated just to news. So they've reached deals with apparently a bunch of prominent publishers. I guess Facebook's going to try and get into the news business now, along with the creeping on you and I guess just the social media networking.
Just when Facebook had kind of gotten out of the news, right? Like, I feel like we had turned our attention to Apple. Like, yeah. Apple had got busted, giving, like, millions of people's data to China. Like, there were Chinese people, like, whose data they were given. But, you know, they had been really bowing down to China. And, you know, the heat was on them a little bit. And now Facebook wants to get back in that business, I guess.
Yeah, Subaru. Yeah, they're always doing something.
They want some more.
Them.
Yeah, they want some more bad publicity. All right. Apparently, the Denver Broncos, Cam, have been fielding calls for their lead receiver, Emmanuel Sanders. Mm-hmm. Sanders would leave behind $6.9 million of dead cap to the Broncos, and the new team acquires him at 1 year, $6.03 million fully guaranteed. So, I mean, $6 million for Emmanuel Sanders. Wouldn't be a bad fit for a team needing a receiver. Any teams jump out to you needing receivers? Like, I mean, to me, the Eagles.
The Packers.
Okay, the Packers. Yeah, the Packers, especially like with Devontae Adams. That would be a really good move. I still feel like the Eagles need a receiver,
yeah,
but.
I'd agree.
Do they risk trading for a receiver again after trading for Golden Tate last year and getting absolutely nothing from him? Like, the Packers, though, make a lot of sense, even though Aaron Rodgers bought out yesterday with no receivers. Emmanuel Sanders wouldn't make sense because apparently Devontae Adams is going to struggle with this turf toe for the entire season. So, okay, good good submission by Cam. Good
team to
keep an eye on.
Maybe the Patriots still, too. They always seem to need one.
Patriots and
Josh Gordon's out, I think. Yeah. We don't know how long on that yet.
And I got to say, there might be another team who all of a sudden is looking around saying, hey, we're actually kind of good. We need some help, though. The Oakland Raiders. Like, they played – I know this final score was bad, but they moved the ball on the Packers a lot. If it wasn't for a – late second quarter fumble by Derek Carr. He had one of those plays where he's reaching for the pylon and fumbled it, and they got a touchback, and the Packers went right down the field and scored a touchdown and then got the ball to start the second half and scored a touchdown and kind of put it away. That game was close. The Raiders were driving for the lead there and fumbled it away. But if you're John Gruden, who, by the way, has been pretty damn good at actually coaching this year, if you're John Gruden, can you afford to trade another asset for a receiver? Because you did that for Martavis Bryant and didn't get anything. And obviously you traded picks for Antonio Brown and didn't get any return there. They did just trade for Zay Jones or Sandre. They acquired Zay Jones. I think they traded for him.
Yeah, I think they traded for him as well. So, yeah, maybe they're out of the market.
Yeah, maybe they're out of the market.
I think Zay Jones is a new start. You never know, but.
Yeah, he's not Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a big name on the market there if you're needing a receiver. Patriots and Packers, that's who I would watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so the 49ers win over the Redskins was not just a sloppy mess. It was also the shortest game in the NFL in the past 10 years. The game lasted less than 2 hours and 30 minutes. It took 2 hours and 36 minutes, which is the shortest game since the Patriots defeated the Jags 35-7 in week 16 of the 09 season. The teams kept it on the ground pretty much the whole game because how sloppy it was. So
yeah,
the
that
clock
was
just going.
That was a really ugly game, and it sucked that you know, if you had any 49ers in fantasy, you probably shouldn't have had many Redskins. Maybe you had McLaurin, maybe you started Peterson, but it was just a really, really sloppy game, and I know I got screwed by George Kittle having to play in that and Tevin Coleman, so
yep.
It was fun to see the highlights, though, when they put it on the red zone. Like, it was cool to see people sliding around.
That was funny.
It looks like they avoided any catastrophe, any injuries. Like, if somebody got hurt there, especially for the 49ers, who are, you know, among the best in the league, if somebody there would have gotten hurt, that would have been bad. But
yeah, I didn't see any injuries for them.
Yeah,
especially
not any big ones. So the 49ers moved to 6-0.
Yeah, about 30. I think it said the average NFL game this season has been 3 hours and 7 minutes.
They got that done what? 2 hours and
36.
So okay,
like
yeah, that's right.
30, half an hour quicker than most, but yeah.
A little bit of breaking news / headlines. Panthers head coach Ron Rivera has announced his starting quarterback for Sunday. Ooh. Who do you think it is?
Kyle Allen. Oh, nice.
Cam Newton stays on the bench, even though he is apparently healthy.
Oh, interesting.
But he's playing against the 49ers. Is this a this feels like a move where maybe you let Kyle Allen struggle and then you go back to Cam? Like, it feels like Cam called it a setup. It feels like a little bit like a setup. Like, hey, you maybe go take this L, Kyle Allen, and then we'll put Cam back in the starting lineup against the Titans. But Kyle Allen, I guess, has done enough to keep the job at least one more week. Because I assume, like, Cam Newton said he was going to be healthy in time, right? Like, wasn't he going to return to practice this week? Wasn't that all the reports?
Yeah, I thought that was the game plan. But, yeah, I feel like this is one of those games they're just against that 49ers defense. They're just going to send Kyle Allen out. If he has a bad game, oh, no.
Yeah.
Guess time to put Cam in. And,
yeah, because, I mean, the absolute worst thing that could happen is that you put Cam in against the 49ers, and the 49ers shut the offense down, and everyone's like, why are we back with Cam Newton?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to avoid here. But, yeah, we'll see. I'd say more time, too, for Cam to get even healthier. Like, even if he's good to go now, I'd say an extra week is not going to hurt. He probably could use it for sure. Yeah, he's been so injury-prone recently. Give him all the time he needs.
All right, so Rappaport just tweeted out that Cam Newton will be continuing to rehab with the trainers this week. No practice for Cam just yet. So,
okay.
I mean, it's fine. Like, if he's not going to start, no reason to have him back at practice just yet. Like, let him continue to get healthy. But it doesn't mean that he couldn't have been healthy and ready to play. Got any other headlines?
I got one more. They suspect has been charged with the shooting death of Andre Emmett. If you remember the former NBA and Texas Tech player, he was shot recently in Dallas, and they have finally got the guy and got the guy who did it, and another suspect also. So good, some justice there.
Okay.
That guy was a big standout in the Ice Cube's Big Three.
Okay, so this happened recently, I guess. I don't really remember this story.
Yeah, it was during a September 23rd robbery.
Okay.
He apparently got shot by someone. He was sitting in his vehicle outside a residence, and they shot him on there like while they're running. But yeah, he was a big time player in the Big Three in 2018. He was second in the league in points. But yeah, they finally got the guys who did that.
Gotcha. So they got the guy.
Yeah.
Or at least they think they do. I guess we'll stand trial or whatever and see. But they got somebody. They got somebody arrested. So maybe we'll get some justice there. Let me check. Do I got anything we need to hit? No. Okay, well, maybe this is worthy of a headline. Kind of crazy. Maybe this might make me have to pump the brakes on 6-4. But Coach Andy Reid said it would, quote, be a stretch for quarterback Pat Mahomes to play for the Chiefs this Sunday.
Huh. I know he was trying to beat the timetable, but this seems...
that seems a little extreme, like a week and a half. I mean, I know they played on Thursday night and you get a couple extra days of rest, but, man, like, it is going to be fascinating to see how they handle this, though, Cam, because the Chiefs do have a tough schedule.
Yeah.
They do have a tough schedule, and they're going to need Mahomes to maybe win some of those games. Andy Reid says, I don't think you put a timeline on this thing. You go off how he feels and what the doctor's saying. Go with it. I don't think there's a set time, though. I know people want a time, but I don't think you can do that with this type of injury. When you've been around him long enough, you know that there's nothing impossible with this kid. He goes 100 miles an hour, and it's important. He's smart. He listens to the doctors and goes to the trainers, and he needs to work hard at the same time to get himself ready to go. All right, so kind of crazy. So maybe, yeah. I mean, there's hope, I guess, that maybe there won't be a 3 or 4 week injury with Mahomes. Maybe it's just a 1 or 2 week injury. We'll see. Saquon Barkley kind of beat the timeline back, and he looked pretty good yesterday. There was a moment where he looked like he was re-injured, but he came back in and scored a touchdown. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with the Chiefs. But Andy Reid not ruling out anything when it comes to Mahomes. So something to keep an eye on in the NFL race. All right, good batch of headlines, Cam. Good batch of headlines, John. Thanks, John. Let's go to break.
Thanks, John.
All right, it's Monday. It's 2:30. Let's play some winners and losers of the weekend. Cam, hit the music.
Winners and losers. Winners and losers. Winners and losers.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you
lose.
Winners and losers. All right, Cam, hit me with your winners of the weekend. Who won this weekend?
All right, my number 3 winner is Brett Maher, however you say the Dallas kicker's name.
Maher, either way.
We'll call him Maher because we love Mauers here.
I'm so, like, by the way, just a little side note, can we please get a quarterback with an easy name to spell? Like, I mean, Dobbs was perfect. Like, just drop in an easy Dobbs. Yeah. Like, between Dormady and Garantano and now Maher, I always have to stop when I get to, like, the AU. I'm like, is there an R here? Or what is it?
They're making it tough on us.
But you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys kicker.
He became the first kicker in NFL history to kick 3 field goals over 60 yards after he hit a 63-yarder in a 63-yarder this weekend against the Eagles. So that's big time. Never been done before. So congrats to him. He's definitely a winner. This man's got a leg. My number 2 winner is Aaron Rodgers. He had been, I wouldn't say bad this year, but he hasn't done anything special this year until this past week. We already doubting him with no receivers out there, but he comes out and has a 6 total touchdown performance game, and he was just, he was unstoppable. Like, he looked lights out. It was pretty incredible to watch. If you haven't seen it, watch the highlights of it. He threw for 429 yards on only 6 incompletions. He had as many total touchdowns as he had incompletions. Like, he was just unreal. Like, perfect passer rating, I think, and everything.
Yeah, it was a nice little reminder to everyone of, like, oh, yeah, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
And, like, that was to a bunch of receivers that you don't – like no one else really wants type of thing. You know what I mean? Like that was just to a bunch of no-name guys.
And he was throwing them to like his running backs were making great catches for him in the end zone too. Like, he was getting it to everybody, and he just looked like when people say he's the most talented quarterback, he tried to back that up this past week. And my number one winner is Appalachian State. I'm giving them the nod because
what the hell they do?
They became the first Sun Belt team to win as a ranked team, they are the first Sun Belt team to be ranked in consecutive weeks.
All right.
So, congrats to them. What a come up for them from being an FCS team to being Division I and now setting Sun Belt records. So I just want to give a nod to them out there. Big time for them.
That's a pretty good list. Winners. I was going to say, I saw that they won like 59-7 or something crazy like that. Yeah. So I was wondering what made them winners outside of just being actual winners. But first team to be ranked in the Sun Belt that actually won a game. So shout out to them. My third biggest winner of the weekend, I got to give it to the Colts. Okay. I thought the Colts had a big win that was getting them in first place in the division. They came off a bye. We've talked about their schedule. I think their schedule is really easy. I like to think that I talk a lot of trash, right? I talk a lot of trash, and the Colts fans, I've talked a lot of trash about them. But I like to think that I'm fair. So I got to give credit where it's due. The Colts probably winning this division pretty easily. And the Colts, I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender, and I still think they would have been one had they had Andrew Luck. Like, I do think Andrew Luck's ceiling is still much, much higher than what Jacoby can do. That's no slight to Jacoby. I just thought Andrew Luck was special. So I still think in the long run they lose with that retirement. But for this season, you know, people left them for dead, including myself. The over-under went all the way down to 7.5, and they're about to cash that in like three more games, it feels like. So the Colts, big division win at home. I'll call them my third biggest winners of the weekend. Number two for me, I'll go Penn State. I thought Penn State, they beat Michigan. They stay undefeated. They move up to number six in the polls. They kind of become that third Big Ten, or that second Big Ten team, excuse me, that people talk about. You know, for the longest it was Ohio State and Wisconsin. Now it feels like it's Ohio State and Penn State. So big win for James Franklin. You know, he's creeping up to tier one. Yeah, I think he has to win a championship before we put him there, but he might be the top of tier two at this point. Number one for me, this might be cheating. I don't know if it's cheating, but it's my rules. It's my game, and I'm going with the trio of quarterbacks. I went with Aaron Rodgers, Lamar Jackson, and Kirk Cousins. I thought all three of those guys balled out and had really good performances in their own way. Kirk Cousins made history. We talked about he's the only quarterback in NFL history to have three straight games with 300 passing yards and a quarterback rating over 130. Lamar Jackson ran all over Seattle, got a big road win, and Aaron Rodgers. Perfect passer rating, 6 touchdowns, a nice reminder of, oh yeah, this guy's the man. It was a nice what's my name type of performance from Aaron Rodgers to to the Raiders. Like,
yeah, they could not stop
it. Yeah, remember who I am. Remember who I am. A lot of talking about the throne, it's still mine. Kind of think we'll see some of that from LeBron this year too, but a good performance from Aaron Rodgers. All right, hit me with your losers of the weekend. Who lost this weekend, Cam?
All right, my number three loser, I got to give it to Matt Ryan. Just another bad performance for the Falcons. He didn't do himself any favors really in the game. And then worst of all, he goes out with an injury. So not only is the team hurting, he is specifically hurting a lot more physically. He's stuck on a bad team. It's only going to get worse from here with him being out. He's definitely a loser this week, as are the Falcons. Next up.
Yeah, we might as well call this the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad.
The Memorial Atlanta Falcons Memorial Losers of the Weekend.
Yeah, I'm about to attend the funeral, but my number two loser of the weekend is the Los Angeles Chargers. When you have that many opportunities at the goal line at the end of the game, and basically I think it was pretty much a must-win game for them, you can't not get a score there. And it was just a debacle from them. Like, Titans helped them a little bit, even gave them extra chances, and they still couldn't get it done. Melvin Gordon, like we touched on earlier, you can't complain about not getting the ball and get stuffed twice from the 1 yard line and fumble one of them. Like,
he kind of fumbled the second one too. Like, he almost fumbled the one right before that.
Yeah, it was just bad all around there, and they just big debacle there at the end of the game for them. So was a must-win for them. And, yeah, now Phillip Rivers is on another bad Chargers team. And we thought they were going to be pretty good this year. So they are my number two losers. And my number one losers of the weekend are college refs. It was bad all around. Lane Kiffin was out here tweeting about his refs.
I didn't see what happened in his game. I saw they lost on the last second touchdown, but I didn't see.
Yeah, I didn't see the exact thing.
The play,
but yeah,
either. But I saw he tweeted about that. And
he
then,
straight tagged Conference USA. Yeah. He got fined for that. Muschamp was complaining about South Carolina, and they did have some big missed calls in that game. And then, of course, we know about the Tennessee-Alabama game. Just some questionable stuff from refs. And it's been going on all year in across college and NFL, really. But, yeah, college refs are my number one losers this week. They got to do better.
Got to do better. I don't know, like, what their pay structure is. I imagine they're not full-time employees because the NFL just got, like, a handful of refs being full-time employees, yeah, like, a couple years ago. But it feels like you should be able, especially for like the as much money as there is in college football, like they're not giving it to the athletes yet. So like, yeah, at least for the big conferences, like for SEC games, like can we not have some full time SEC officiating or officials? Can we not have
I'll do it if they need somebody. Like, come on now.
Oof. Might not be a bad career path. They always talk about how much of a shortage there is for officials. Cam, you're still relatively young.
Yeah,
you're in good shape.
Take that test.
Work your way up. Could be kind of cool.
Yeah, it would be fun.
And then all of a sudden we could have you go viral. We'll have you go viral, like when you're racing the the athletes down the sideline. Like,
and
you'll,
that's when I'll come back for Rick.
That's right. You'll come back 10 years later. Remember me in your black and white shirt. All right, my losers of the weekend. The third spot I went back and forth on. I ultimately gave it to the combination of Mike Vrabel and Marcus Mariota. I thought Vrabel got exposed as being a dumbass, at least to his fan base. I don't know if it'll gain national attention since the Titans ended up winning, but Vrabel looks dumb for his in-game management again. Also looks dumb for his decision to stick with Marcus Mariota. Mariota looks like a loser just because the offense doesn't miss him. The offense got better without him. And I understand the Chargers defense, you know, had some backups in, and the Chargers defense hasn't been great this year. But still, their defensive line, at least with Joey Bosa, is still pretty good. And the Titans hadn't been able to get the ball to their skill players, and they did all day on Sunday. And Corey Davis finally resurrected from the trash pile. Number two for me, another little combo, I went with Melvin Gordon and Mitchell Trubisky. I couldn't decide between one of them. Mitchell Trubisky comes back from injury, comes back out of the bye week, gets his triumphant return, and nah, bro, still lost and still looks like trash. And you take an L. You take an L, a bad L at home, and it looks like you are going to be the full blame as to why this team stinks and why an elite defense misses the playoffs. Really bad game for Mitchell Trubisky. Melvin Gordon, Cam kind of hit it. You ask for more carries, you ask for more fourth quarter carries, and you do absolutely nothing with them, and you also lose your team the game. Since returning in week 5, he has 36 carries for 81 yards. That is 46th. Among the qualifying 47 running backs in the NFL. So he is second to last in yards per carry. You held out. You came back. You then complained about your workload. And then you fumbled the ball when your team had a chance to get back to 3-4. And, like, the Chargers, man, like, you had a chance to get back to 3-4. And I don't know if you noticed, guys, but Patrick Mahomes is out. Like, yeah, you might could have, made some ground in that divisional race, but now it looks like you're teetering on, like, blow-it-up status, although we'll see. My number one biggest loser of the weekend, got to go with Wisconsin. Got to go with Wisconsin. They don't have very many opportunities for signature wins. Like, they get Ohio State, and they might get Ohio State twice, I guess, but would that be enough, Cam, to put them back in the playoff?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Like, I feel like even if they run the table, yeah, losing to Wisconsin this year feels like it should be the death blow. They got at Ohio State this weekend, which I think they got caught looking ahead. Mm-hmm. Like, they were getting ready for Ohio State this week. Didn't want to get too open up the playbook too much, but lose to Ohio, they play Ohio State. If they beat them, they then would play Iowa and at Minnesota. Minnesota and Iowa are 17th and 20th respectively. And then you'd probably get a rematch with either Ohio State or Penn State. Maybe if you run the table, you would have a chance. But, man, like, Got to think that two SEC teams have a better chance. Like, you know, the loser of Alabama LSU, you probably take them over Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
If the other team, you know, finishes a win loss, Oklahoma. I don't know. I guess in this equation, you knock out Ohio State, you beat them twice, so maybe you could get in. But for now, Wisconsin, they lose a real big. Avenue with their margin of error, because I think, Cam, if they'd have beat Illinois and say they go to Ohio State next week, they go to the Horseshoe this weekend and lose, they still probably could have controlled their destiny by running the table and then beating them in a rematch. But losing to Lovie Smith, man, that feels like that ruins Wisconsin's chances of making the playoff. All right, good batch of winners and losers. Good job, Cam. We'll play some last call, pump the brakes, and keep rolling next. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.